Hi, everybody. Get us all to get a moment to get here. Okay. We're going to be looking at self-love today. One of my favorites. A couple of logistics pieces before we get started. First of all, this is our last training call for 2023. Oh my gosh. If you still want to hang out though before the year is over, we do. Wait, let me make sure I'm not telling a lie. I don't think I am. We do have one more Q&A call next week. We do. So, if you're like, no, I want to hang out one more time, need a little more before the end of the year, please come to our Q&A call, our business community call on Monday. And then when we come back after winter break, we have just January, and the month is gonna go by quickly. Some of the juiciest, and I think most fun sessions are in January. We're gonna look at journaling as a coaching tool. We're gonna toe dip into ritual as a coaching tool. And we're gonna have our very last session is a combination of training on how to have a next steps conversation with our one-on-one clients, invite them to continue with us, and how do we do that? And then in that session, we'll have our kind of closing ceremony for Sacred Depths. And I think you're all gonna really love it. I promise you, when we get back from break, I'm not going to do it today, but when we get back from break, I will spend a little time going over certification pieces. I know there's a lot of questions now that we're coming to the end. Don't worry, you don't have to have all of your requirements done by the last day of the program. We'll look together and if you, this is what I have to say to you now, and I'm going to tell you again when we talk about it in more detail. If you desire to be certified, you will get certified. We are going, like, even if you think you are so behind, we're going to create a plan. You're going to make it happen. I promise. Last logistics piece for now. I have been doing a happy dance every time somebody steps into advanced depth. I'm so excited about the circle that is coming together. It is an intimate journey, and it's just gonna be so powerful, and really a great next step. Not only if you want to be able to go deeper with your clients, but advanced is so much for you. It is a journey for you, to get to know yourself even better than you already do, and to look at all the aspects of shadow that we look at there. There is still plenty of time to step in. The special rate is until this Friday, and there's still plenty of time to have a conversation about it. If you have been feeling like, I really want to talk to Joanna and not Caitlin or Inbal about this, I am here. I'm around this week. Reach out to me. I'm happy to have a conversation with you about it. Just shoot me an email or a Facebook message. And we can look together and see if it's right for you. I've had a couple of questions about money. And the question has been, oh my gosh, I really want to do advanced, and the investment is a stretch. So I'm going to be sending out a little more information about that. But for now, what I want you to know about it is that we can crunch numbers if you really feel called to the program, but we need to just kind of finagle some numbers, do something different with the payment plan, split the deposit in two, whatever it is, we can sort that out. Just get in touch. Okay. So we're going to be taking a look at cultivating self-love. And first question is, why are we exploring self-love in a practitioner training program? Well, for about 100 different reasons, but here are a few. Number one, self-love is a vital component to either achieving goals, or for those of us who are get it done people who can achieve goals without self-love, self-love is also a vital component to being able to reach our goals while being kind to ourselves and to our bodies and to our nervous systems. Self-love in one way or another is almost always going to be part of the antidote to supporting a client to moving out of a stuck place. It is almost always going to be part of the antidote for that. And then, of course, as practitioners, it is so vital for us to have self-love. Energy follows energy, right? It's hard for us to bring it into the container with our clients if we're not feeling it ourselves. And maybe you'll agree with me on this. Check this out. But I have really found that the journey towards self-love or towards a more self-evolved love, evolved self-love, it is a journey. It's a process. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And really, except in just really rare cases, I've never seen it just flip in an instant. So I say this to say, really, I believe we're always working on self-love in one way or another. And of course, already in Sacred Death, we've discussed self-love in many different ways, and we've looked at activating self-love in many different ways, right? The befriend your fear process, part of that process is a process of loving your fears, and because of that, loving parts of yourself. The rewiring technique, one of the layers of rewiring is loving the part of you that is holding these limiting beliefs. And thereby, in doing that, you're loving more of yourself. Everything that we've looked at by way of celebrating, honoring what is, right? So much of that, it comes down to many things, but so much of that also comes down to self-love, right? So we've already looked at it, but I wanted to spend some focus time today looking at some other entryways or pathways into self-love. And of course, we could do a 6-month course just on this. But we're gonna look at some, I think, really potent, important pieces around this today. So before we look at pathways in or entryways in, I think the first question is, what is self-love? I have my own definition, and that definition I've come to see over the years is a living, breathing thing. It evolves continuously. So I'm not gonna define self-love for you. I think it's a personal thing, and I want to invite you to define it for yourself. So take a moment, jot down, what is self-love? What is your definition of self-love? And I'd love to see some definitions in the chat. How would you define self-love? What is self-love for you? Susan Hagen is saying unconditional, open-hearted presence with all aspects of self. That's so beautiful. I love that. Who else? What's your definition of self-love? For Catherine, lots and lots of grace. Beautiful. Who else? Jen says, hearing, oh, I just lost it. Hearing, seeing, respecting, appreciating all my parts. Beautiful. For Danielle, a deep and abiding care and delight in the mysterious divine being that I am. Yes, all of these are so beautiful. For Brie, holding space for my unique growth journey in this ever-changing life with warmth and compassion. Yes. For Helen, the capacity to relate to myself from a place of acceptance, understanding, and compassion. Beautiful. For Victoria, supportive connection to myself and all my many parts. Holistic, inclusive, centered, calm, nurturing. Yes. I won't read all of these out loud. It'll take a long time, but let's take a moment to just look at them. They're so, so beautiful. And let me ask another question, another couple of questions. So I shared a couple of reasons on why I think it's important to cultivate self-love. It does help us reach our goals. The more lo we love ourselves, the more we can achieve our goals, or the more we can achieve them with kindness to self. What else for you, as you think about it, why is it important for you to cultivate self-love? Right, there's so many reasons. What are some of the biggies for you? Jen says Dharma. I love that. Maria says it's a vow to be a vessel of love. Oh, karma, Jen, not Dharma. I thought Dharma too. Yeah. For Victoria, space and capacity to resource. Yes, to all of these. What else? Why is it important for you to cultivate self-love? Anyone else want to share? For Amy to be with what is unfolding in each moment, beautiful. For Susan Larkin, I don't think I can be effective for others if I'm not coming from a loving place with myself, beautiful. For Sharon, ripple and role modeling is part of the whole, beautiful, yes. Things are healed when they're loved. Yes. Hagen is saying it's what makes this earth journey palatable. Yes. Jen is saying, because I matter and deserve to be heard, seen, and loved. Yes. Because my capacity to be with myself expands my capacity to be with others and show up in the world. Yes. Okay. One more question to think about for right now. What have you been holding back from because of not enough self-love? Is there something that you've been holding back from? Maybe yes, maybe no. Because of not enough self-love, or because it's time to cultivate more self-love. So what I'm going to say next, we all already know, but it's still important to say. Even when you are evolved, spiritual, coachified, therapized, etc., there are still more places to evolve when it comes to self-love. Why is that? Why is it that it is this journey that I've been talking about, that it's a marathon, not a sprint? Well, for a couple of reasons. Number one, because culture, and we can define culture as culture at large, our parents, the systems in our culture, etc., because culture doesn't prioritize self-love. Culture prioritizes devoting time and energy to achievement and productivity, but not so much devoting time and energy to self-love, right? So that's reason number one. We're just not trained to devote time and energy and focus and attention to loving ourselves. We're not trained to prioritize it. Number two, because culture often tells us that you're valuable and lovable if you produce and achieve, but it doesn't tell you that you're inherently worthy and lovable simply because you are a living, sentient being. That you're worthy of love and self-love because of your existence, period. So, in other words, love, self-love, and self-worth are often have strings attached in culture. We only get to love ourselves if we achieve, if we produce. Number three, because culture is ridden with hierarchical thinking. When you're taught that any type of person is less than because of race, religion, achievement, physical status, physical appearance, gender, marriage status, on and on and on and on, right? Then, number one, if you're lower in that hierarchy, there's not going to be, it's going to be hard to love yourself. But number two, even if you end up at the top of that hierarchy, because you are participating in the system of hierarchical thinking, shadow dictates that a part of you is always going to feel less than as well, because it is in the collective unconscious. Here's another reason why, even when we're evolved, self-love is still an ongoing process and journey. Because culture often tells us that we are X, you can insert something negative here, full of ourselves, selfish, foolish, etc., if we think too highly of ourselves or love ourselves. The messaging is there's something wrong with you if you aren't self-confident, but make sure that you don't have too much or love yourself too much, because then there's something wrong with you too. And then, of course, because of all of these reasons that I've mentioned, the ways that maybe our parents modeled self-love, the way they treated themselves, impacts as well, right? So many messaging and so many beliefs. Let me pause here, because there's a lot in what I just said. I'd love to hear some voice-to-voice shares. What's feeling important so far? Even if you already knew it, what's clicking even more deeply for you? What's resonating? You'd like to share? Volta.
I think I'll just add to it that like culture and Hollywood, like we're so programmed to be outside of ourselves and to look for love outside. I mean, I know my personal upbringing was hurry up, get married, right? Like find someone who could take care of you. And that wasn't, I wasn't taught mostly. I mean, I did have some wonderful, parenting that did occur, but like, yeah, I was mostly taught to like receive love outside myself and then I'll be happy.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're bringing that into the picture of, you look for love outside of you. It doesn't come from inside of you. Or maybe you get to love yourself, but only if it's validated first by people on the outside loving you. Yeah, good. Jen.
Yeah, I love this topic, and I just want to, well, not just, I want to say how eloquently you're sharing this information. I've had a lot of conversations in the eating disorder recovery world about this topic, and I really love how you're laying it out. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of throw the word competition into the mix. It's a lot of what we're talking about and what you're presenting is the competitive culture that is produced in society, whether that's the the mode, like a la mode of what type of body type is in for, say, you know, a like typical man and a typical female, and how even that just creates this competition of like the, you know, in like a like the hetero world, it would be like the woman is the trophy, and you know, to become that trophy. Again, I'm kind of thinking of it in like the eating disorder recovery world, and how these like trophies are so different culturally and also based in time. Yeah, and I love saying thank God for Beyonce because she just, I, in my opinion, she has a huge something to do with reclaiming that the curves and all that. But it's really, it's like all about time. It's all about culture.
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
just how our culture is a certain way, but there are other cultures that really put you know, other types of looks, and
that's right. There's always going to be the hierarchy, and there's going to be the people in power that are deciding what is valuable and what's not.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Danielle.
I think someone, maybe Amy, put this in the chat, but for me, it feels very connected to presence and kind of the sense of being awake in my own life. I definitely can see how that would impact us as coaches and our ability to just fully be present to the unfolding in a session instead of spinning off. And I also think of the word generative with this, because it is a learning to come back into our own nervous system. And a lot of us could call it like reparenting ourselves, but like a coach that I worked with, or actually she was just a teacher, she called it care. She was really clear for her. She was like, I think love sometimes people can think it's a feeling. She was like, when it comes down to it, it's like turning the same care that you would have if you found a child alone or a kitten alone, and turning, for us culturally, it's like turning a big Titanic ship, slowly turning that love, that care towards yourself is a process, like you're saying. And I love that she would also pair that with like coming back into our own nervous system and having this kind of imagery of like just taking things off, like tentacles from like ancestors, or a lot of us with like lines of women of like, you've taught on like scarcity mindset with competition and sister wound stuff, and just coming back into ourself. And then that gets me really excited just about life in general. Someone else said that. They're like, this is what I feel like makes life enjoyable.
Yes, palatable. Yes, Susan Regan said that. Absolutely. Yes to all of that. And we're going to look at the care piece, because that is one of the entryways or pathways. And it is so, so important. So I'm glad you're bringing it in now. Good. Maria Singh, what's clicking for me is, even if I'm personally cultivating a self-love practice, we are all swimming in the collective unconsciousness of distorted love. That's so, so well put. And we're gonna pick up more on that too, because that is actually one of our roles as practitioners in all of this, is to challenge some of that. Mika Singh, it feels so important all over again to co-create awareness and name all these factors that are not necessarily obvious to some people, and normalize the deep-rooted, long-standing impacts of them on our lives and our ways of being. Yes, it's like, even if we know, right? I know also, I just shared it with you. It's so important to come back to remember the waters that we swim in and how it impacts how we feel about ourselves, because it's the water that we swim in, it is so easy to forget. And then we just take it as truth that this part of us isn't lovable, or that person is better, or we're not worthy because of this, right? Whatever it is. And that is the other reason why it is an ongoing journey and not a once and done, because we're going to continue to live in the culture. And until the culture radically changes, we have it coming in and coming in and coming in, and we want to keep on coming back to ourselves and the deeper truths on this and supporting our clients to do the same. Susan Hagen is saying, what's resonating that in a paradigm of hierarchy, even when we're at the top, one will feel resonance within of the experience of at the bottom as well. Yes, I'm glad you're underlining that. Again, that's that shadow piece with the hierarchy I was talking about. Even if you're at the top, because you are operating in a system of hierarchy, you have a feeling inside of you that you're trying to avoid of, oh my gosh, what if I'm at the bottom? Or what if I get to the bottom, right? So it doesn't actually matter where you are in the hierarchy that culture lays out. There is going to feel a less than if you are playing in a field of a less than, period, end of story. All right, let's keep on going. So we'll pause here for a couple more inner questions. What are some ways that you're not loving yourself right now? What are some ways that you're not loving yourself? Look back at your definitions of self-love. That will help spark some things. Here's another question to think about. How are you right now, if you may or may not be, but if you are, how are you right now tolerating other people not fully loving or evaluating or valuing you? How are you tolerating others not fully loving, valuing you? Oh, Susan, and Susan is saying from the last question, the self-judgment. Yep, we're going to look at that too. I'm asking this question about others because when we're younger, sometimes we kind of have to tolerate others not loving us. But when we're adults, we can set some boundaries on that. But we don't always. So it's good to, you know, and that kind of can show us more about where our self-love is at, right? So how are you tolerating others not fully loving or valuing you? And none of this is for self-judgment. This is all for awareness. A few more questions. So I know that for sure, on the surface, you believe wholeheartedly in loving yourself, or else you wouldn't be here in the class today. But what are some of the below the surface beliefs that you have about loving yourself that are maybe limiting, right? So even if you're like, yes, self-love, so important, as we've sort of been starting to unpack this topic today, What are some of those other beliefs that maybe tell a different story? I'll add to that to help you think about it. What have you been taught about being lovable or not being lovable? What have you been taught about being lovable or not being lovable? Or maybe for you, one of the under the below the surface beliefs is it's extravagant to love yourself or too egotistical, right? Something like that. One more question, and then I'd love to hear some voice-to-voice shares. This question is a little bit of a shadow question. It's an important one. How have you been taught to not love others? Right? Because again, it's all related. We cannot fully love ourselves if we are also not loving and valuing others. How have you been taught to not love others? Yeah, and Jen, I love the distinction that you're making in the chat about love and value. So true. All right. I'd love to hear a couple of shares. What's sparking for you here? What are you seeing? I want to hear your voice. Who wants to share?
I'll share something. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just confronted, this is bringing up lots of thoughts. I was just confronted by a sibling this last week with his judgments about me. So when you're talking about, yeah, I can sit home by myself and love myself all day long and feel really good, but then as soon as I go out into the world of contempt and, you know, all these feelings that people have about themselves, then it's easy for me to think it's about me. You know, yeah. Like when I see contempt on someone's face, to think, oh, that's contempt for me. That makes me a bad person. Instead of thinking, oh, that person just has contempt within them, you know? And yeah. So my sibling was trying, he gave me this label of being controlling. And And I was asking myself, am I controlling? Like, I know I used to be controlling, but am I controlling? And then I realized, oh no, he's, that's a projection. Like, I could clearly see that was a projection. So yeah, thanks for bringing it more to my awareness of to develop these skills in my house all alone and around all my coaching friends. That's one thing, but it's going out into the world is a whole other level.
It takes a deeper level of self-love to not take in the projections of others.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I'm so glad you're bringing that into the conversation. So, so true. Thank you. Kristen is saying in the chat, I was taught that my lovability was dependent on my obedience to my mother. I was taught that as well. And that and church and cultural expectations. Yep. Danielle.
I was thinking about a moment I had several years ago. I've shared before about exiting a more fundamentalist religious world. And I remember setting this intention and not thinking of it at the time as an intention, but just so with every fiber of my being wanting a different, I felt like a key to turn in my heart to just change the way I see people, because I had been programmed to view people mostly based on their behavior and so much superiority of morality. And you combine that stuff and everything is behaviorism. And I love the work we're doing. And I love this in the paradigm that, like, the more we can understand the roots and the causes of things, it just does breed way more compassion. And so when you ask that question of how you were taught not to, I think a behaviorist lens of the world, let alone children, I'm thankful that, like, that was very evident from the first time I had a child. I was like, oh, I don't see her as a bundle of behaviors. There's more going on here, but it's so limiting. It limits your capacity to love people.
It's so true. It's so true. Absolutely. I'm so glad that you're bringing this in. And so interesting, because what you're sharing, what Lara just shared, and some of the chat, is so much of this comes down to also working with the root shadows, right? Because the things that we've stuffed into the shadow places are because culture has told us that they are wrong, that they are shameful, that they're not as good, that they are dangerous, that they are harmful, right? And it comes up so much in this topic. Good, Golda.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on and valuing that question of how I was taught not to love. And this feels super vulnerable to say, but I just had this remembrance of my mother, in addition to her, like, hurry up, get married. And her also, her other impression was to make sure he loves you more than you love him.
I just got chills when you said that. I feel like there's something really important there in general, but for you, even right now, it feels like there's something really important there. Good. Yeah. Victoria.
I have a kiddo who's home from school. So that's just a little caveat there. Might be some noise in the background, but something's connecting for me with the work we've been doing with time and self-love, where I've been spending a lot of time on, like, values and boundaries and priorities. And what's coming up for me just in this last bit was, I was taught that, like, I needed to show love by prioritizing others' priorities. And so that really links into the whole work we're doing on time, because
absolutely,
and comes
this is why this is exactly why this is after the time module. There is a method to the madness. It is very much related. When we looked at time, I was saying that time and money are related. But I really actually think it's a trifecta. Time, money, and love, self-love are all related, self-love and self-care. Yeah, good. I'm so glad that that's popping. Okay, good. Let's keep on going. Of course, like I said earlier, I wish we had 6 months for there's so much here. But I want to share, now that we kind of have this foundation of understanding about self-love and kind of what gets in the way and why it's hard to love self and all of that, I want to look at some different pathways in with ourselves and with clients. And of course, like I said earlier, we've already looked at techniques, but here are some other things to think about. The first one is very quick, to share, but really important. And I really believe, like I said this earlier, this is part of our role as practitioners, is to continually challenge the dominant culture. On any topic, self-love especially, but really any topic, we don't ever want to approach it with ourselves, with a client, that it is only about the personal, that it is only about their personal experience or what happened in, you know, with their parents or their teachers or their last job. Absolutely, right? We do want to look at that. That's why one of the questions, for example, in Befriend Your Fear is, what event or series of events brought the fear into being, right? As an example, the personal. But what we want to understand is that the personal is always related to the cultural. Always. They do not, there's not, they don't exist separate or in a vacuum from each other. What we have experienced personally is rooted in beliefs of the culture in one way or the other. So I'm really underlining this because I want us to all be aware. It helps so much for compassion, for normalizing, for seeing bigger pictures, for understanding, you know, helping clients understand why it's so hard to move from it, why that, right? It's just, it's helpful in so many ways. And in order for us to do this work as practitioners of challenging the dominant culture, what that means is that we have to consistently be aware of the messages that have seeped into us from the culture, right? Because we can't challenge anything that we're not aware of. That's what's so, I don't know what the word is, evilly brilliant about, like, all of this, right? Like, the water that we swim in is that we don't even know to challenge it a lot of the time because we just think that it is. So this is, if you're noticing I get excited when I talk about this, it's because this is like, this is, I think this is the activist part of any practitioner, even when we're doing personal work with clients. We get to slowly also help change the culture person by person by person by doing this work. I'll pause on that. Anything else for right now that wants to be said on that? Jen?
Yes. We're creating a love army. I love it. I mean, that's what I joke with my clients. I'm like, I'm right here with you. We're just be a part of my love army and I'll be a part of yours. And I know I've said that to this group in the past. I wanted to offer a quote from the RODBT world. We don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are. It's been really helpful just to come back to.
Yeah.
Check our filters. Really, and like when we get so like, this is, you know, it's like, yeah, we see it as we are. And that has everything to do with the soup we've been swimming in. So
completely. Yeah. And another definition of shadow, you know, projecting out, right? Not only the projecting in, but the projecting out. Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. This is the revolution. I mean, if we want to be the, you know, see, create the change. We have to be the change. So it's like consistently becoming more aware of ourselves. So yeah, thanks.
Beautiful. Thank you. Okay, so that's a pathway into cultivating self-love, challenging with our clients the dominant culture, the beliefs that seeped in through the dominant culture that they've taken in, etc. Next, pathway to consider for cultivating self-love. I'm sure many of you know of Tara Brach. She wrote a book called Radical Acceptance. I'm gonna play on that, and I'm gonna say radical self acceptance. So, what is radical self acceptance? Well, you can't love what you don't accept, period. You can't love that which you deny, period. You can't love that which you fight against, period. And you can't leverage what you don't accept and then love. So acceptance doesn't mean that you don't have parts of yourself that you want to change. I definitely have parts of myself that I want to change, FYI. I don't want to change the parts. I want to change the behaviors. I'll even be more clear about that, right? And it doesn't mean that you're not working towards that change if it's possible to change those behaviors. But what it does mean, what acceptance does mean, is that you accept where you're at, what you've got, whether you can change it or not. So this is simple and it's also so big. This is so big, right? Because think about how often we fight against parts of ourselves. We fight against behaviors, right? Like we hate on it. We simply like, I will not accept this about me, or I won't accept this about my situation, or right. The such a fundamental step is the acceptance. So some personal examples, I can give you a long, 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 long list, but I will only give you three right now. One of the things that I have had to accept in my life, and this is kind of like, it seems like a silly thing, but it actually, in some ways, at some points, wasn't. I'm really shitty at giving gifts. Ask me to give words, write a card, right? Like, that's my love language, speaking of love. But I'm really bad at giving gifts. We're in the middle of Hanukkah right now. My kids are furious because gift giving has been like. And it's like this every year. And it's like, I'm just not good at it, right? I've been working. This year is better than last year, which is better than the year before. This time of year, I'm working at changing that behavior because it impacts the people around me. But I also accept that this is like, I'm not good at it. Another example. I'm never going to be the mother that gets her kids to places on time, that has fresh baked cookie, chocolate chip cookies waiting for them when they come home, that could sit and play dolls for hours. And for so long, I made that wrong about myself. I really did not accept that part of me. And made it such a liability. And I felt awful about myself for it. And it got in the way for a long time of me authentically, in some cases authentically connecting with my kids because I was so aware of this. And it had me be jealous of other mothers that could do, you know, all the things. It wasn't until I did some work like for radical acceptance of this part of me that I could then leverage the other parts of me that make me an amazing mother, right? I'll give one more example. This is something I have not yet fully accepted, but I am working on right now. Speaking of culture, guess what? I don't look the way I did when I was 25. And of course, on the surface, I'm like feminist, woman power, age gracefully, right? All the things. And yet, the culture I live in, other beliefs have seeped in more deeply to me on this, right? So we want to cultivate a compassionate, accepting relationship to the things about ourselves that we've been hating, that we've been fighting, that we've been making the enemy, that we've been denying. By the way, this is a very simplified definition of doing shadow work. And this is what radical acceptance is, right? Cultivating acceptance, compassion, and having an accepting relationship with everything about ourselves. Sounds easy. We know it takes some work, right? So take a moment just right now and jot down or start to jot down, what are the parts of yourself that you haven't been accepting? What are some of the parts of yourself that you haven't been accepting? Kristen is saying this feels like a beautiful antidote to shame. Yes, absolutely. So then the next question is, all this sounds fine and good, but then how do we do radical acceptance? How does that even happen? It's a process. With some of the like most unsavory things, we want to do the deeper shadow work. But that being said, you already have a number of tools that you've learned in sacred depth for this. So number one, just creating awareness like we're doing right now is a step, right? Oh, you know, I haven't been accepting that I'm really bad at giving gifts, right? So honoring what is, creating awareness. The even though nevertheless is a really good tool that can help move a client towards self-acceptance, right? So even though I'm not good at giving gifts, nevertheless, we still have a lot of fun during the holidays and somehow I pull it together by the last day, right? I don't, whatever it is, right? But doing the even though nevertheless's. Doing a befriend your fear, but instead of befriending a fear, befriending a part of you that you've been having trouble accepting, coming at it with love and dialoguing with it. Great way to cultivate a deeper relationship and acceptance with it. For some clients, it might be starting with having them just simply state it and then write about the thing from an objective place, right? You know, I'm not really good at giving gifts. I blah, 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 blah. But to take the emotion out of it and kind of write a story about it from an objective place. Lara's saying, I would love to hear more examples of things people aren't accepting about themselves. I can't see the things I can't see. I know they're in shadow. You'll notice them now that we're talking about this. When you're listening to clients, you will start to see where they're not accepting themselves. But that being said, if people want to throw some examples into the chat for Lara, that would be great. So I'll give you a moment for that. Great. So one last piece for now on self-acceptance. I believe strongly, and you can check this out if this is something that you believe as well, that it is our job as practitioners to radically accept our clients, all of them. Which is sometimes easier said than done. To be able to accept others, accept all of who they are, we also need to be working towards accepting more of ourselves. It goes hand in hand. The more judgments we have on ourselves, the more judgments we're going to have on others. The more acceptance and compassion we have for the behavior, our behaviors, our parts, like all of that, the more we're going to be able to show up in that way for others. Energy follows energy. Okay. Next pathway into self-love, connection to spirit and the sacredness of all of life. So, what do I mean by this? Connection to spirit and the sacredness of all of life. So, first, back to something I said earlier. In session, that if you're living, you are of inherent value and deserve love and wonder and awe, period, end of story. You do not need to do anything in order to be lovable. And sometimes just this alone is a something we want to message to our clients, something we want to create awareness on, because again, that hasn't been taught by school, by society, by many parents, by religion, etc. Or in the purest form of religion it has, but then somehow it's become adulterated, right? So this sacredness of all of life, because you are part of this world, because you are a sentient being, you are sacred, you deserve love. And then, of course, if you believe in spirit or some kind of higher power, you can bring spirit into this as well. And what I mean by that is that spirit, God, the great mother, right? Whatever word you want to put on it or that is appropriate for your client, it can often become a corrective or a, how do I want to say this? We can use spirit as a way to, as the loving parent, if you will, right? My parents didn't give me love. Society didn't give me love. That teacher didn't give me love. That boss didn't give me love. Even the old God, right? The God that I grew up with in my family wasn't a loving one or an unconditionally loving one. But that being said, if we can support our clients to connect to spirit in a different way or, you know, different kind of spirit, that can be a source that reminds us of how sacred and precious and worthy and lovable we are. So this can look as simple as what would spirit want you to know about this part of yourself or about this behavior, right? Whatever it is that they're not loving, right? Or what would spirit want you to know about you, period. So bringing that spirit level of learning and processing, activating God, whatever God means for that person in a loving way. And I'll share with all of you that one of my most persistent personal inner work practices is writing letters to myself from the goddess. So for me, the goddess is all loving, all nurturing, can remind me of how worthy and lovable and okay that I am. And especially in times where I'm faltering on that internally, I will sit down and connect in. So for me, again, it's the goddess, but it can be anything. I will connect in with the goddess and have her write a love letter to me. And it's not that every time I do it, and I've done this hundreds and hundreds of times, she ever writes anything too different than the time before, right? But I need to keep on hearing it and sometimes like source that in order to source it from myself. If we want to go there with clients, and they have a little bit of a funky relationship with spirit because of how they're open to it, you know, because of how they were raised, we might open up an exploration of what they think God thinks about them or feels about them and start to kind of poke some holes if there are some limiting beliefs there. Another way to kind of bring in this connection to spirit and the sacredness of all of life, invite your clients to spend time in nature and to be in wonder and awe of the world and in what being alive means, right? We are children of this alive, incredible, wondrous world that unfortunately we are so disconnected from in this society. Invite a client to spend time with the wonder of a tree, you know, or with a pet, or with a child, and have them be in awe of the spirit of their dog, right? Like that's that just that life force, and to remember that that's inside of them or of the child, right? Not the accomplishments, not even the personality, just the fact that this thing is alive and has a life force moving through it. Let me pause there. Thoughts, ideas, questions on this piece? Victoria.
I'm thinking of this one long-term client that has worked so much to develop self-love, and with her nervous system, if we like start doing the work and then she starts getting activated or a bit dysregulated, we now over time have actually created a place that she goes to and can find herself there, and she can describe it and feel it. And while she might not call it like a place of love or of self-love, it absolutely like has that quality and that like regulating, supportive energy where like she can like, yes, like do the hard work, but then like also pause and go resource herself and then go back into the work when she feels it's right. Like,
yeah, that's so beautiful. I love that so much, to have this place to go to, because that self-love is so regulating. And it's, you know, when we're doing the bigger work with clients, it is going to be dysregulating. Like, it's not right. It's not bad if someone gets a little triggered or dysregulated. Dysregulation is also a sign of a change of status, which we're looking for when we're working, we're doing transformational work. But then to have this place to plug back into is so, so beautiful. I love that. Thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, I'm not sure where this fits in, but I really feel called to share. I guess it's a lens or a perspective that someone shared with me once, was that like the self-love or the self-care is on four different, oh, actually, I'm just thinking it's like the four levels of learning and processing. It, you know, spiritually, emotionally, cognitively, and physically. And like for me at the time, it was such a big shift, because I had been looking after myself really well spiritually, emotionally, doing the like limiting beliefs and stuff, but I was completely dropping the ball when it came to the physical and like looking after myself, feeding myself, giving myself meals. And it felt that when I shifted that and kind of put that piece into place, that holistic picture happened. So anyway, I just wanted to share that as a lens for seeing it as well.
I love this so much, relating it to the four levels of learning and processing. And it is, it's a perfect segue into what we're looking at next, which is self-care, right? That physical level. So this is not to be underestimated, as Jessica just shared with us. There is a very intimate relationship between self-love and self-care. And it is very, very hard to have the self-love without taking care of yourself. And taking self-care is going to mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. We'll look at that in a moment. But I will share with you, and maybe you have a similar experience yourself. There have been moments in my life where, as soon as I started giving myself more sleep or hydrating more or giving myself exercise that I may have needed or space, immediately I was not as hard on myself and hating on myself as I was before. Do you know a little bit what I'm talking about when I'm saying like this direct correlation? And the thing that is, I just lost my train of thought because I saw Katie's quote in the chat, which I love. I just have to read it. Love nature, let nature love you back. Just love that. Okay. So anyway, the thing that's so ironic about this self-love, self-care thing, or that's so tough about it, is that when we are not doing as well loving ourselves, self-care can oftentimes be one of the first thing that falls away. And it's the thing that we actually need to up more when we are not doing so well in that moment on loving ourselves. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? So because I'm a Virgo, I've divided self-care into two kinds of categories, but if this doesn't make sense for you, just ignore it. The first category, and it's important, sometimes we want to do an assessment of this with our clients, right? Assessment of ourselves. The first is what I like to call nourishment. So I'll just ask you to define for yourself what nourishment means for you. What does nourishment mean for you? Food for the soul. I love that. As we kind of take a look at these different ways of self-care, I have nourishment and I have pleasure. And again, they can also be one and the same. But as we look at them, there's one thing I want to point out. And again, this is my truth, so check it out if it's true for you. True self-care is different than checking off the boxes. Like, I did yoga, I did my meditation, I took my supplements. I mean, yes to those things. That helps me do the things. But sometimes we end up just randomly putting things on the self-care list that aren't actually going to nourish us, but they're have-tos, not desires. So when we work with ourselves and we work with our clients to look at some of these self-care pieces, we want it to really be led from desire and not become another productivity thing, not become another thing we have to do to make us valuable, to love ourselves because I went to yoga class today. So then now I'm worthy. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Because our culture is so focused on productivity and getting the list done. Even for me, I catch myself in this, you know, like that's what it can easily become. I want to encourage you, whether it's for you or with your clients, to really approach it as like, whatever the self-care practice is not something, oh, I did it for the day, but this deep care, right? This like deep love and this deep care in the action, not just the doing it to get it done. The quality of the doing it is really important. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes, yeah, Susan is saying, I didn't exercise this morning because I needed sleep. Sleep was self-care. Exercise would have just checked the box off. That's such a great example. Such a great example. So some of the things under, you know, nourishment could be sleep. You'll have a whole list of this. I'm going to, in your resource, in your member center, I'm just going to quickly say sleep could be eating well. For me, it's balancing my blood sugar is such an act of self-care. Hydrating, taking supplements, exercising, honoring your particular pace or rhythm on any particular day, like Susan was sharing. Grooming can be part of incredible self-care, right? Not because you have to, but if it feels like an act of love to get your hair cut, to brush your hair, to wash your, you know, whatever it is, to do your nails, to all of that. Anyway, there's a whole list. I'm not going to go through all of it. Sometimes for us or for our clients, we have to break through some limiting beliefs. It goes back to productivity oftentimes, but just some limiting beliefs on making the time for the self-care and the fear that things are going to fall apart, right? Can look at the time module for that as well. And then I put pleasure as a little bit different than nourishment if it's helpful for you. Like I don't balance my blood sugar for pleasure. I balance it because it is nourishing for me. Or even exercise. I mean, it's not, I don't find it pleasurable, but I do find it nourishing for me personally. But then I have other self-care things that are about pleasure. Like I just finally finished Jane the Virgin. I mean, that was so much pleasure for me. I can't begin to tell you. Doing the New York Times crossword, do it every day. Pleasure. For me, taking a walk around the block, noticing the sunlight as it casts shadows on the sidewalk, pleasure. Having a cuddle session with Yael, pleasure, right? So for me, I see them a little bit differently, but if you don't, that's fine too. Last piece for today, I have to end at like 1:58 Eastern today. But just last piece on self-care and self-love, self-care, all of it. Who you choose to hang around is an act of self-care and self-love or not. Who you choose to hang around, to spend your time with, is very much related to self-care and self-love. So it might be time for a relationship detox if that's a self-care piece you want to work on, right? Or look out with a client. Okay, I know there was so much in our call today. I'd love for you to write down what is one of the top things that you're taking from our call. Yeah, and Mika saying in the chat, it's fun to formulate our personal recipe or menu of self-care, which keeps evolving. Yes. I'd love to hear either in the chat, but I'd love to hear from voice to voice from some of you. What are you taking from our time together today? Either something that you're going to do or a piece that just feels really important and juicy, that's resonating, what's coming together for you. I'd like to share. What are you taking from our session today? Lara saying it's easy to fake it and do something that looks like self-care instead of actually caring for self. Yes, I'm so glad you're taking that with you. I hope you do something that's actually caring for self over the next days. Sharon.
Yeah, I think that's kind of linked into what I wanted to say around. I get quite agitated by all the love and light that can be in the world that's not authentic, or what I judge as not authentic. And for me, there's something really important about the acceptance of what's unconditional self-love for me that can then be present with that outside. Okay, yeah, this the phrase that's coming to me is have a nice day. It's like, what's that about? And kind of that sort of the throwaway comments. So there's something in the authenticity and genuineness for me, and that reflection in others. So
Yeah, I love that. It's so true. It's the self-love is not just loving the light. It's loving all of it. It's accepting all of it. It's being with all of it. Yes. Beautiful. Golda's saying in the chat, obligatory free holiday season is an act of self-love. Yes. But really appreciating the reminder of the dominant culture is such a strong influence. Yes. Yeah. And for Dawn, too, challenging culture, the radical self-acceptance. Acceptance, what is even when I want to change it? Yes. Yes. All is an antidote to shame. Yes. Danielle.
I'm aware in myself that I sometimes it takes the greater good to get me into action to care for myself. And it's not something I'm proud of. I'm aware of conditioning that has got me there. For example, oh, I am going to care for myself as a mother because that impacts my children. It took me that process to get to care for myself. And I'm thankful that I got there. But in the same vein, I think about I get pretty like excited when I think about this in the through the lens of shame being a symptom of power over culture and dehumanizing. And it's basically a tactic to get people to comply with the status quo. And so this work is this kind of F you to them, like shame and reclaiming our agency within ourselves to be home and to be safe and to be radically accepting. And so that helps me still because I need a little boost sometimes.
Yeah, we all do. We all do because it's so persistent. Beautiful. Well, thank you all so much for being here today. It's really such an important class. I can't wait to hear how this evolves for you. If I'm not going to see you again in 2023, if I don't see you till 2024, I'm sending so much love and Happy New Year. And again, a reminder, if you want to talk about advanced depth, if you want to talk about shadow work, please, please reach out. I would love to hear from you. I'm sending so much love. I'll see you soon.